get ready.
Hello, I think.
Welcome to the Galactic Escape Pod.
Incoming!
Well, come on.
Nice of you guys to drop by.
The official podcast of Galactic-Voyage.com.
Everybody quiet. We've been waiting for you.
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
Impressive. Most impressive.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Galactic Escape Pod. I'm your host, Gary Willis, and we're so glad that you're back with us today. We have a fantastic show in store for you today, and some of the topics that we're going to be talking about as we move forward are going to be that FanWraps has new graphics for your vehicle. Also, Smuggler's Gambit has a new Facebook page. There are some Star Wars personalities that are interested in reprising their roles, whether that be for Episode 7 or for a possible standalone movie. And also, has Harrison Ford been confirmed to be in Episode 7? Well, we'll try and delve into that a little bit more and find out. Also, we got Part 4 for you today of the Star Wars story on the LP, and we're looking forward to sharing that with you. But our special and our guest today is Mark Newbold of Jedi News, and we're so excited to have him with us. This will be the first part of a two-part interview that we had with Mark, and so we'll be delving into that a little bit later in our briefing room. So we're looking forward to talking with Mark and sharing that with you. But let's go ahead and get into the news.
Do you know what's going on? Maybe it's another drill.
What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me.
All right, move along.
So the first topic we mentioned was the fact that there is this company called FanWraps that has new graphics for your vehicle. Every Star Wars fan has at one point imagined that they were driving a TIE fighter or speeder bike, and with FanWraps, fans are one step closer to making that an actual reality. With numerous graphics to choose from, fans can give their earthly vehicle an out-of-this-world makeover. So with small, medium, large, and extra-large images to choose from, you can make your vehicle really stand out in the crowd. Graphic options include the TIE fighter and X-Wing combo, Chewbacca, artist rendition of the Slave Leia, R2-D2, the Stormtrooper, Boba Fett, Yoda, and Darth Vader. So be sure to visit fanwraps.net/Star Wars for more information. Our next topic is Smuggler's Gambit, as they have a new Facebook page. Kyle Newman and Paul Bateman have launched the Facebook page dedicated to Smuggler's Gambit. And if you'll remember, Star Wars Smuggler's Gambit was recorded live at Celebration 6 in Orlando, Florida, and is based on an original script by Kyle Newman and F.J. DeSanto. The audio extravaganza was directed by Kyle Newman of Fanboys and produced by Jimmy McInerney of Rebel Force Radio and was performed to a packed audience of almost 2,000 diehard Star Wars fans. So be sure to check out the new Smuggler's Gambit Facebook page at facebook.com/pages/star-wars-smugglers-gambit. So some Star Wars personalities are interested in reprising the role, whether it be in Episode 7 or in a standalone movie. And Ewan McGregor recently chatted with MTV News and was asked about starring in such a film, and he was all for it. He said, "I think it's a good idea. The only bit that I could get away with is doing the part that after the last one he made, which was Episode 3, before Alec Guinness, there's a period where he's in the desert. Also, Jeremy Bullock would be willing to return as Boba Fett." Ryan Leston caught up with Jeremy Bullock, and he revealed that he was willing to return as Boba Fett in the upcoming films. And he said, quote, "Yes, that would be fun, but I come at a price," end quote. The 68-year-old Star Wars veteran seemed enthusiastic about rumors that Boba Fett could be getting his own spinoff film. He says, quote, "It would be a great idea," and he explained that, "I have to agree, Boba Fett has been a fan favorite since we first saw him chasing Han Solo across the galaxy in The Empire Strikes Back. And I have a feeling that there's a lot more story to tell." Jeremy also explains that he'd love to see what led him to become a bounty hunter, and that the rivalry between Han Solo and Boba Fett goes back a long way, and it would be very interesting for us to see all the reasons behind that. Also, John Williams has expressed some interest in scoring the Star Wars sequel trilogy, and here's what Williams had to say during a recent concert. "We're about to play Star Wars, and each time I play it, I'm reminded of the first time that we played it decades ago. Neither I nor George nor anyone else involved thought that this was going to go as far as it did in a few years, and that would be a sequel, and that I'd have to revisit the themes. And years later, another trilogy. Now we're hearing a new set of movies coming in 2015 or 2016, so I need to make sure that I'm still ready to go in a few years for what I hope would be to continue working with George." So there you have it. We have John Williams also very interested in playing his role in the music piece for the Star Wars films. So could Harrison Ford be reprising his role in Episode 7 as Han Solo? IGN has an article with a rumor that the return of Harrison Ford in Episode 7 is possible. Latino Review broke the news on Fox News Latino, where they said, "It's official. Harrison Ford will reprise his role as Han Solo in the upcoming Star Wars movies." While not infallible, Latino Review has broken many big film stories that were indeed confirmed down the line, and they also stated that, "I found out yesterday, and I did do my due diligence like I do with everything. I triple-checked. Legitimate sources." So, for now, Lucasfilm has not officially announced anything regarding the subject of Star Wars casting, but they went on to say, "His deal is done. It's just a formality, and they haven't really announced it yet." He also noted that he didn't know the exact extent of Ford's role in the new films, but that it's significant. Now, to me, this feels like J.J. Abrams' announcement, so I wouldn't be very surprised to see an official announcement in the coming days. In our latest Star Wars The Clone Wars episode, this is Season 5, Episode 18, there were tons of great nods to different elements of the Star Wars universe. We had what is now Admiral Tarkin, and he was really playing his role just wonderfully, and I give tons of credit to Stephen Stanton for that. He was coming up very close to Ahsoka. He grabbed her chin, and if you think about things as he worked with Princess Leia on the Death Star, it's very similar to that. If you're looking at the detention area, you feel like you're very much in A New Hope with the... If you look at the floors and the walls, everything looks very similar to what we saw in Star Wars A New Hope. Also, there was the feeling of Revenge of the Sith as they were on the outside of the prison. And during that time, during the chase, there were elements that really felt like Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. Also, there were elements of 1313, the new Star Wars game, especially as Ahsoka jumps down into one of those bottomless pit holes on top of a starship. You really, if you've seen the trailers for Star Wars 1313, you really get a sense of that. So this episode really played tons of homages to the different elements in Star Wars. And Ahsoka's character was just fantastic. You know, she was able to escape. She was blocking different shots from stormtroopers. She was extremely athletic. And you just really were pulling for her as we were moving through this episode. So I'd like to play you a bit of a clip of this episode and let you enjoy that at this point.
"Suspect has killed 3 clones. Code red. If you see the target, shoot to kill."
"Belay that order, Commander Fox."
"She's killed troopers."
"I know, Commander Tano. She would never do something like this."
"Then who did?"
"Quiet! Ahsoka!
It's me, Anakin!
Stop running!
You can't help me, Master. Someone's setting me up.
I believe you, Ahsoka.
But no one else will.
Keep searching until we find her. Rex, call security. Tell them we need to search the entire base. Now!
General Skywalker has just issued an all-points bulletin on Commander Ahsoka Tano. She's killed three clones and should be considered armed and dangerous.
So again, with this Clone Wars episode is really great. The animation is great. The story was great. So I really enjoyed this one, and I definitely recommend that you go and see this episode. And we continue with the story arc next week with episode 19, and then the following week with episode 20, and that will be the end of season 5. And so we're still looking for a big cliffhanger or a big something to happen, according to Dave Filoni and his crew, about what's going to be going on during these episodes. So we're definitely looking forward to more of that. Now the special event we've all been waiting for. Our first special guest, is Mark Newbold of Jedi News. He's also a contributor to the Star Wars Insider magazine, and we're extremely happy to have him with us today. And so let's head on over to the briefing room and get started. Welcome everybody to the briefing room of the Galactic Escape Pod. This is the first instance that we're having of the briefing room, and today our special guest and our first guest that we're going to be having with us today is Mark Newbold of Jedi News. So how are you doing, Mark? Glad to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Gary. It's a long time coming. Looking forward to it for a while, so it's going to be good to chat.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some things that how we've kind of met up and how we kind of got along and what your kind of history is as we move forward. And this might be the first part of a two-part episode, and then on our second part, we'll also be talking about some of the things that are going on in the Star Wars community. So, first thing I want to do, back in 1999, I kind of came onto the scene with Galactic Voyage, and you were there with Lightsaber at the time. And so, how did you kind of get started with Star Wars? What was the thing that got you going?
What got me going with Star Wars? I'm an old fart, so you can go right back to 1977 for me, when the original film came out. It came out in the UK a bit later than it did for you guys in the States. I think we got it sort of December time. But I always remember kids were talking about it in the playground before the film had even come out. So there was a buzz about it. And I think when I went to see it at our local cinema, I think it was only the third film I'd ever seen at the cinema. Uh-huh. I think I saw 101 Dalmatians, Benji and Star Wars were my first three. So that's a good mix. And it just captivated me straight away. I was just hooked. And like I say, a lot of kids, I mean, we were 7, 8 years old, a lot of kids were into it, playing with the toys, getting all the names wrong like we always did, collecting the comics. But our old neighbour, who's still a friend now, she bought me issue 6 of the UK weekly comic. We used to get weekly Marvel comics. She used to strip them down into weekly episodes. And it just started from there. First figure was a Death Star droid. My uncle gave me the novel. So I read the grown-up novel when I was 7, which I was quite proud of, and it just went from there. And I think I was saying to somebody the other day, I don't honestly think there's been a day, and I really mean this, I don't think there's been a day where I've either not thought about something Star Wars related or done something Star Wars related ever since. Because I know some people come and ebb and flow, but it's just stuck with me all the way through. So yeah, that was where I really got started. But in terms of the online presence, which is obviously how you and me got to know each other, I started doing Star Trek websites in the mid-90s, back when Star Wars was big, and obviously the Tsar novels and all those novels were taken off and things were busy, but Trek was really huge. And me and a friend called Louis Turfey, who I used to do Lightsaber with, or would do Lightsaber with later on, just early, very early days of the internet, just got started on a very, very basic page called the Q Continuum. Now he did all the tech stuff. I'm completely tech useless, so but I did most of the content. So I would sit there. This is back in the days when if you wanted to type A, you'd type 1-1, and B was 1-2, and C was 1-3. So it took forever to type stuff in. It was laborious, but it was pretty quick. And it just kind of rolled on from there. So I think from memory, we did another Trek site, and then we did a bit of a more of a general sci-fi site called Fanta War. I think in 97 we did a site called Wirezone, and Wirezone essentially changed name overnight to Lightsaber back in 99.
And then the rest is history, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's strange, you know, now that I'm doing Jedi News, and I feel like I've been doing Jedi News forever, because essentially, even though James and Adam, who's now with Rebel Scum, started Jedi News in 2007, and I started Lightsaber in 99, we merged, the two sites essentially merged. So for me, at heart, I'm still doing the same site that I was doing sort of 15 years ago, really. It's just another iteration of it. You know, it's a different version of it, but it's essentially the same site. So,
well, it sounds like we've had very much the same type of start with Star Wars. You know, back in 1977, I was 8 years old, and just I remember watching the commercial come on for Star Wars on TV, and I think I was just floored the first time I saw those original commercials. And I remember asking my parents to go to be able to see Star Wars, and it was going to be my first PG movie, and back then PG movies were a big deal. So, yeah. Like you said, it was like the Disney movies, it was more G-rated stuff. And so my parents had to kind of think about letting me go to that PG movie. Of course, kids these days see PG movies like it's water, but I had that same type of journey, and I was, you know, one of the first people in line for those original movies. And from the time the crawl took place to the time the Star Destroyer flew overhead, you know, I was just enthralled. And, you know, my mom said that I didn't move a muscle. And typically I had been one to ask questions in movies and say, well, what's this about and what's that about? She said I didn't move, didn't want anybody to talk. It was just I was focused on the movie from the start to the finish. And as soon as it finished, the first thing I said was, can we get back in line and do it again? So, you know, I had that same memory of, you know, coming through with Star Wars that you did. So what would you say is your fondest memory of Star Wars growing up?
Growing up? I mean, there's lots of sort of friend-related moments. I've got very fond memories of my oldest friend's a guy called Paul Squire, and me and Paul have written a lot of stuff together, and Paul helps out with Jedi News in terms of the fiction. So we've been talking Star Wars since we were three, literally. Star Wars wasn't that when we were three, but, you know, we've been friends since we were three, and we've talked Star Wars all the way through. So I've got very cool memories of me and him playing with our old sort of Empire Strikes Back figures in his back garden in the snow, all the Hoth stuff. But I'd have to say, looking back on reflection, I was very lucky. I had a letter printed in, I mentioned the Star Wars Weekly comic. Over time, it became Empire Strikes Back Weekly, then Empire Monthly, then Star Wars Monthly, and then Return of the Jedi Weekly. And I had a letter printed in Return of the Jedi Weekly. So when I was about 12, so I just remember running hell for leather, and I was a chubby kid. Hell for leather down the street to the newsagents, because a friend of mine had got the comic, Andrew, and he says, Mark, your letter's in the magazine. I went, really? And I says, yeah. And I says, well, how do you know? Because I'd written under a pseudonym. So I've been writing fan fiction about my character since 1982, so it was sort of 31 years now, called Jan Lamona. He's a smuggler. But I'd written the letter under this name, Jan Lamona. So I put Jan Lamona and put my old address where I lived in Burtwood when I was a kid. Uh-huh. But he recognised the address. So I was like, oh, wow. So I went running down to the newsagents, bought a copy of the magazine. I didn't run back because I hadn't got the image. I walked back, read the magazine. And, yeah, it was that probably, well, I would say that would be right up there. Also seeing Jedi, we missed the first half an hour, so we walked in halfway through the Jabba's court scene and the cinema people letting us stay and watch half the film again. That was a very cool moment. So I
did hear you say you had some of the toys. Or did you have much in the way of the Star Wars toys growing up?
Yeah, I've still got them all, actually. I'm looking at them. I'm very lucky. We've got a spare room, and it's been completely taken over by Star Wars stuff. With a view to getting an extension done at some point, hopefully next year. But, all my old Star Wars stuff's on the top of the wardrobe. So, yeah, everything I had, I've still got. So, and it was the normal kind of stuff that the Falcon and the AT-AT and the Snowspeeder and the Scout Walker and all that sort of stuff. I actually, very recently, at a Farthest From event down south here in the UK, managed to finish off my complete run of original figures. I didn't realise I was missing three. All these years, the past 20-odd years, I thought I'd got them all.
Oh, wow.
But I hadn't. So very luckily, I've managed to finish off. So I have now got a complete run. Not carded, sadly, all loose. But I have now at least, I can say, I've got a complete run of the original figures. So much nostalgia wrapped up with just playing with those toys. I know it's the same for all of us from that era. You know, just looking at those toys, the smell of the box and just holding the figures. I think these new 5-point figures, 5-point of articulation figures that were announced at Toy Fair, I think they're going to go down really well because they're so like the old figures. I think I might start collecting them.
Yeah. Well, of course, there's so much to collect these days. I know that, of course, I started my collection in 77, or 78, I guess, when everybody started getting theirs as well. And
what was your first figure, Gary? What was the first one you got?
My first figure I got in Easter, in my Easter basket, and it was the Luke Skywalker. And he wasn't on the card. I guess my parents had already taken him out of the card, but set him in the basket. And so I was in hog heaven. Because when I was growing up, Luke Skywalker was the character for me. You know, he was the one that I really was the most fond of. And then I think my second figure, I can't remember if it was the Stormtrooper or R2-D2, but I think it was the Stormtrooper, the one I actually spent my own money to buy the first figure, going into a Toys R Us, which is a toy store here in the United States. And I don't know if they have those in the UK or not.
Yes, we do, yeah.
I know you can get them online now, but of course we didn't have the internet to be able to do that. But I just remember walking into the Toys R Us and seeing the wall of Star Wars figures and just remember my parents saying, you can have one. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to choose? And of course, I think there were, 12 or 15 figures originally. But the wall was full of them, and there was the ships, and there was the blow-up lightsaber with the and I had one of those later on where you'd basically hit a balloon with it and pretend like you were fighting with the drone droid that would yeah. shoot at you. So, but I think it was the Stormtrooper was the one that I actually officially bought myself as the first figure. But I jumped into the cards right away and started getting those, and I remember very quickly on my parents said, especially my dad was like, you're not going to continue to buy this stuff because this is just a waste of time and money. And I was like, well, I'm going to keep it all, and I'm going to keep it all in the packages and those type of things. So I've done very well at being able to keep my original collection in its package. And actually, I've got my mother's house has all my original collection, and that's back in Virginia, and I'm living in North Carolina. And then my attic is full of more of the more recent stuff. But, of course, with having children, I've got 3 kids and a wife and all, and as the Hasbro stuff kept moving along, my collection tended to have to stop.
So,
I've got stuff up through Revenge of the Sith and a little bit after that, but much after that, it pretty much died out. So I just had to let it go. It's just too much. I couldn't be a completionist anymore.
No, that's it. Like you say, I mean, there's so much stuff. I think some collectors... Some people like Steve Sansweet are very lucky in that they've got the space and the time and the capability to get most things. And I know even Steve hasn't got everything. I don't think anybody's really actually got everything.
I feel sorry for anybody who tries.
He certainly does. And bless him, I'm glad he does, because I mean, Rancho, you know, the whole project is fascinating to, you know, just to watch and see how it's developed over, you know, over the years. I think anybody would love a collection like that, but I know it takes an awful lot of time and care and attention. But I think a lot of collectors will kind of pick on one, either one film or one, or at most they say, oh, I'm an original trilogy collector, or I specialise in R2s, or we've got Matt Booker on Jedi News, he specialises in Boba Fett. You know, so you get certain people who just pick specific things. I get a little bit of everything. I like the books, but I'm not a massive book. I can't keep up with all the books now. So,
sure.
You know, Pablo's Essential Guide, the companion that came out last year, is just amazing. Because at least I've got a chance now of being able to keep up with stuff. But you know, it's just curiosity, things that grab you and catch your eye, I think sometimes are the best kind of things to get. You know, everyone's got a different collection. No two collections are the same.
So you know, do you have a favourite item that out of your collection you'd say is the thing that you probably treasure the most?
There's probably 2 things actually, and there's a connection. I've got a hardback first print of Art of Star Wars. I met Ralph McQuarrie about 16-17 years ago here in the UK, and was very lucky in that I got to spend about 5 minutes with him to have a bit of a chat. I think the queue had wound down, and I just saw a gap and dived in and managed to have a little chat with him, which was really just niceties, nothing deep, but it was just really, because when I was a kid, I got really into the behind-the-scenes stuff very, very early on.
Right.
So even as a youngster, I was as into the making of the film as I was the film itself. excuse me. So I found that really, really interesting. So to meet Ralph was a big, big deal. But when I was there, I also had with me issue 15 of Bantha Tracks, big Bantha Tracks fan.
Right.
And that's the one with Ralph on the cover painting the snowscape from Empire Strikes Back.
Love it.
And he signed that as well. But when he was at the event, this is at Memorabilia in Birmingham here in the UK, I think he'd been signing, all he'd been signing was the portfolio and, you know, no disrespect to anybody, but the very obvious kind of stuff. And I brought this Art of Star Wars hardback and you know, this Bantha Tracks, and he was like, wow, I haven't seen this for years. And he was going through the Bantha Tracks, reading the issue, and I forgot about that. And he was really quite taken with it. In fact, I remember the guy, I'm not sure who it was. It might have been Stan Stice, who's a friend of Ralph's and who helped him an awful lot with various projects over the years. I think it was something daft like £5 an autograph, which is ridiculously cheap. And I think, and I had two autographs, so it should have been £10. And I think he only charged me £5 because
oh, wow.
He was so taken with, you know, the stuff that he was signing. So I'd probably say those would be the two.
Excellent.
I'd cheat. I'd slip the Bantha Tracks inside the hardback and take the two.
I think probably the one thing that I have that stands out for me is I have the Darth Vader from CinemaCast. And it was a item that actually had you see in one of the interviews that I think it was on the old 2004 DVD that he's doing some behind the scenes talks, and he's got a Darth Vader figure that's sitting in behind him up, and that's the CinemaCast figure. So they were supposed to have a run of different figures, but apparently the company folded and they didn't finish. I know that it took me forever to even get the one that I got, and it was a Christmas present from my mother, and she was starting to be concerned that since the company had folded that we were even going to get it. She had paid for it, but we weren't even sure we were going to get it. So the fact that I have that CinemaCast Darth Vader, that's one of those that are special for me.
Don't you find those collection pieces, it's the ones that you can kind of attach a story to?
Sure, yeah.
That mean the most. I mean, that my items is a really nice little story, and the same with that, you know. I think sometimes day by day we'll pick bits up and we'll pick things up. Oh, I'll grab the latest novel or I'll grab the latest figure, and it's just, you are just kind of picking it off the shelf like you grab a newspaper, and there's nothing behind it other than the fact that you've got it and you've read it and put it away and that's it. But like you've just said about that Vader piece, you know, it's nice that there's a story behind it and you kind of become more emotionally attached.
So tell me a little bit about, let's switch gears a little. Let's talk about the fan fiction, because I know you're really big into fan fiction. How did your love for fan fiction and getting started with that begin?
Oh, wow. It was, I started in 1982. It sounds horrible saying 1982 because it seems like such a long
time. The 80s were such a good time.
It was between Empire and Jedi, so I was getting, in the UK we had the Empire Strikes Back monthly back then. Actually, no, it had become Star Wars monthly, and just for brand awareness, I guess. And they'd done I think it was about issue 57 for you guys of the Marvel run. I think it was Hello, Bespin, Goodbye.
Uh-huh.
It was the whole Lando, Lobot, Treese, Captain Treese, all that sort of stuff. And I still, to this day, don't quite know why I did it, because I was so taken by, I mean, I love Lando as a character, and I love the whole Bespin vibe, and Empire was obviously fresh in my mind. But I remember the comic coming out, and then writing a sequel to the comic, essentially, in a story of my own called Quest for Freedom, which is what I called the tale. And I still think now, why didn't I twig that next month the next issue would come out, and there would be a follow-up to this story? But anyway, I essentially wrote a sequel to this comic story. But peppered it with my own characters, and then as time went on, changed from just writing about Darth Vader and Luke and Leia and Han and Lando and Chewie to writing about these original characters, and it kind of percolated and built and built, and then I moved about 6 miles up the road and met a guy called Jonathan Hicks, who's now a bit of a mover and shaker in the roleplay industry.
Right.
Me and John started doing audio cassettes together, and we did about 20 or 30 stories. But then the thing that really took off for us was when West End Games released the roleplay, Star Wars roleplay, and things just went bananas from there, because we were roleplaying 2 or 3 nights a week. So all these characters we'd designed back in the day when we were doing the stories were given a lease of life, a new lease of life within the roleplay arena. So we would just do scenario after scenario after scenario. I was still writing short stories. And just over the years, it just built and built to the point that when we did Lightsaber, which is obviously when you and me got to know each other, Lightsaber was essentially launched to be the with the stories are set in a place called the Setnin Sector. So it was basically going to be a Setnin Sector website. It developed far beyond that in time.
Right.
But we were adding two or three short stories per week for years. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on the site. And I'm still writing now. I'm working on stuff now, you know, with a view to, you know, hopefully at some point doing something with it. But yeah, it's a big undertaking. And now sort of moving it all across the Jedi news and making sure everything fits and makes sense and chronology-wise, making it all work. It's a proper labour of love, but I wouldn't not want to be doing it. I absolutely love doing it.
You know, speaking of lightsaber, one of the things that was very just fantastic about that particular site was the fact that you had so many different in-depth interviews with so many different people. How did you create so many different contacts with these different actors and writers and all in order to, you know, gain their interviews? How did you do that?
I think that, well, the first one I did was with Kevin J. Anderson back in 2000, I think it was. I think it was partly because I realised pretty early on that doing lightsaber.
It's hard to change when you change it, doesn't it?
I know. Brain doesn't switch over yet. Doing lightsaber, that I couldn't just sustain it by just talking about my own fan fiction. It seemed a little bit, not arrogant, but I thought, well, people aren't going to really be that into it. So over time, the fan fiction became part of the site as opposed to the focus of the site. But I thought, well, interviews could be something that I kind of get into. So I found Kevin J. Anderson's fan page that he had at the time, emailed him, not really expecting him to come back and say yes, but he did. He came back and said, yeah, I'd love to do an interview, send me the questions. So that was the first one that I did, and then pretty quickly I thought, oh, this went really well. So I got in touch with Dave Prowse. So Dave Prowse was the next interview, and it started to build. And I did four or five over the first year, and I did a couple the next year and a couple the year after. So nothing crazy, but when I relaunched Lightsaber back in 2005, just around the time of Revenge of the Sith coming out. In fact, it was March the 5th, which is the same day that Wikipedia launched, if I remember correctly. I decided then I'm going to do an interview every week, or every other week, rather. So that really kind of took off. And it's just a case of getting online, finding out who their agents are, or if they have a webmaster running their site. It was just a case of getting out there and finding, you know, those kind of details. And I still have to do it now. But I think after a while I kind of got a nice reputation for not giving people too much of a hard time and trying to be, you know, kind of even-handed about the questions and such. So after a while I would chat to people. Sometimes it's on the phone, sometimes it's by email, and sometimes if it was on the phone I'd say, oh, you wouldn't have to know so-and-so's contact details, would you? Obviously I won't share them. And some would say, oh, I can't, but here's his agent's name or her agent's name. And some would pass it on with, you know, with their blessing. So I got quite lucky. The best was when I interviewed, I still can't believe this happened. I interviewed Rick McCollum
right.
About 5 or 6 years ago, and he was brilliant. And in fact, my house phone ran out of juice halfway through the call.
Oh, no.
There's a recording. I'll send it to you. There's a recording somewhere. Not for family consumption, when the phone conks out, my wail of pain, it was like something being speared. But he phoned me back. Couldn't believe he phoned me back. He must have been enjoying the conversation, I guess. But so we talked for another 15, 20 minutes. And at the end, I just said, just as we're talking now, just in conversation, I'd love to interview Irvin Kershner. I'd really love to interview Kershner. I'm trying to get hold of him. And Rick says, oh, we can sort that out for you. And a couple of days later, all the contact details come through.
Oh,
so
wow.
I found Kurt. So I got one. It was a case of a nice interview leading on to another one. But yeah, it's just kind of hustling and getting out there. But I think the more pushy you are, in some respects it can work for you, but in most respects I find it doesn't. It's just nice to be friendly and polite about
sure.
it. And obviously we started interviewing, we called it our webmaster interviews, which is when I interviewed you back in 2006 or 2007, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so good times, and I really want to pick that up again with Jedi News now. We've got so much going on. It's finding the time to fit all these things in. It's crazy.
And of course, that was one of my favorite parts of your site, because it was just, you never know who it was going to be, and even the webmaster ones were very interesting, because you know, you're in a community with these folks, but at the same time, you really don't know about them or how they got started or what, you know, kind of motivates them and keeps them going. So I always love to hear the stories about all these different people and kind of what made them tick and what was going on.
Yeah.
You know,
they were nice to do. They were nice ones to do, I've got to say. It's nice to interview the stars and the cast and the crew and the people behind it and the authors and the artists. Always nice to speak to them. But yeah, there was, like you say, it's a shared experience talking to you, as we were kind of on the same tracks,
right?
You know, in that fandom, you know, and talking to Tracy from Club Jade or Nathan Butler or whoever it may be, you know, all these people have got similar kind of experiences, all unique, but there's a thread that kind of follows all them through.
So, you know, one of the things also that you've had an opportunity to do is to write in the Star Wars Insider magazine. So, you know, I'm wondering, did these interviews kind of lead to that, or how did you get involved with being able to write for Star Wars Insider?
I was a massive Bantha Tracks fan from really quite early on. I think I joined the fan club in 81, 82, something like that. So it was always a big, big thing for me. Maureen Garrett was and still is somebody I would love to sit down and have a, you know, have a coffee with. The old fan club president, or, you know, she used to run the club back in the day. But I think it was about 2005, 2006, I interviewed Frank Parisi. He was the editor of The Insider when it was at IDG, I think it was. I may be wrong there. But we swapped a few emails before the interview and kind of hit it off, which was very nice. And I said, could I pitch an idea for an article to go in The Insider? I think initially I said, is there anything you need doing? Basically me saying to him, can you give me something to do? That's not the way to do it. You know, he's not going to do that. He's, you know, he, if I come with an idea that's worth doing, he'll consider it. So I went away and went to the memorabilia show that I mentioned earlier and covered an event called the R2s. Now, you guys in the States used to have the Atom Awards, you know, the fan video award thing. But we had, I think, you know, it happened once. The R2s, it was like a UK version of. And James, that I do Jedi News with now, was with a different site back then called the Private Universe, and he was there with the Hasbro team covering the event. So he gave me a little bit of access to get in and take pictures. I wrote my little article, interviewed the guy that won it, a guy called Dan Mason, who I interviewed in the Webmaster Interviews on Lightsaber, and sent it into Frank, and it was accepted. So I've got, there's a picture of me somewhere holding a check that came from IDW. IDG, I think it was, with a big silly grin on my face.
And not like you're doing it for the check.
Oh yeah, didn't hurt. So, you know, but that was amazing. That was issue 90, so that was about late 2006.
Right.
So I was just completely, I felt a little bit vindicated all these years of being Mark the Star Wars guy, rabbit about Star Wars all the time.
Right.
So I could actually kind of say to people, well, I've actually put an article in the official magazine, and Frank sent a lovely letter, I've still got it, when he says, Mark, you are now an official insider, which was really, really, really cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. But,
it was about 4 years later when I got in again, and it was, like you just said, it did come off the back of the interviews, because I'd done lots of different interviews with different people in relation to all the films, really, but they were doing the 30th anniversary of Empire, issue 119, now run by Titan, and Jonathan Wilkins is the editor, who's become a good friend since then. And he was looking for interview pieces, so I got some archive interviews, essentially, because they weren't living anywhere at the time. I'd stopped doing Lightsaber. It was between Lightsaber and Jedi News launching, me joining Jedi News, I should say. So you got all these archive interviews, plus I went away and did a couple more, and the funniest part was I had a phone call from Jonathan at about 5 o'clock on an evening, and he says, they want to get an interview with all the different guys that played Bounty Hunters, and we've got different bits with different ones, but we can't get any in touch with Alan Harris, who played Bosk. Can you get in touch with Alan? And it just so happened that I was going to a convention, and the guy that was putting the convention on had Alan as a guest. So I says to Jonathan, leave it with me for until tomorrow. I said, leave it with me till tomorrow, and I'll see what I can do. So I got straight on the phone, and I phoned this guy up and says, I need some help. I'm writing an article for The Insider and they need to speak to Alan. Oh, yeah, I'll give you Alan's number. So he gives me Alan's number there and then. So this is 5 minutes after I spoke to Jonathan. I've managed to get his number. So I thought, blow it, I'm going to phone Alan now. So I phoned Alan straight up, explained who I was, what I was doing. Oh, yeah. Have you got 5 minutes? Yeah, right, let's talk about it now. Did the interview over the phone there and then, annotated it down as fast as I could. So within 2 hours, I'd managed to turn around an article for The Insider.
Oh, wow.
And got it back to Jonathan. So he was quite pleased. So yeah, it's been an adventure. It's fascinating. And I'm very lucky in that I do tend to get bits in most issues now. Not that I ever take it for granted. It sounds, I'm probably jinxing myself by even saying that. But yeah, it's great. They're brilliant people to work with and work for. very, you know, cooperative and helpful and full of ideas. And yeah, as a fan, as a geeky fan, it's the best thing that I do. I love it.
So, are there any future articles or projects that you have planned for that?
Yeah, there's one actually. I can't tell you what it is yet, obviously, because it's coming out in the summer. But there's one big piece. I wish I could. There's one big piece that I've just sent in, and I've got a little bit to finish off. I've got to phone up. I can tell you who I'm phoning up actually, because it won't give anything away about the piece. I've got to phone Robert Watts up, so I'm speaking to Robert Watts hopefully next week.
Okay.
To finish off this article, that won't give you a clue as to what it's about, but. It's all come together very, very nicely, and that's the next big thing that's going in.
So as things are moving forward with you in not only the Jedi News but also in the Insider, are you now officially becoming involved with Lucasfilm?
I wish I could say that I was. I mean, I don't think so. I mean, that's obviously, like every fan, that would be the ultimate the ultimate plan.
Have to ask.
I think because we've really gone for it with Jedi News lately, you know, in terms of the content we're putting on, we've really been quite eclectic. In fact, I've got to tell you something. I'm looking at the front page of the website right now, and if you look at the page, there's a sidebar to the right as you look at the page. And for some reason, it's slammed all the way to the side of the screen. That's not by design. I spoke to James the other night, and James told me that I've actually broke the site. I says, "How? What do you mean I broke the site?" He says, "You're putting 30 articles a day on. You physically broke the site." So we're getting all these very nice comments from different people. You know, Jimmy and Jason have said some very complimentary things about the site, which I really appreciate. And different people have said nice things. And you know, and it's a labour of love anyway, because obviously, you know, I've been doing websites since 95, so it's something that I've always fit into my life through marriages and being in bands and changing jobs and all different things that I've done. I'd like to think that I'm kind of building a little body of work, and that someday somebody at Lucasfilm will go, "Ooh, let's take a chance on Mark." But I don't think that day's there yet. But you never know.
You know, and the further you go down the road, the more likely of those type of things happening. You know, there have been a couple of people. It's really been interesting from my end, because I don't usually get to go to the conventions and to all the gatherings, and you know, I see people online a lot, and they're talking, and and I watched people through the years come from. You know, I've known some folks that have been just an artist who likes to draw Star Wars, who've become contacted by Lucasfilm and then become an official artist from Lucasfilm, and you know, folks like yourself who've taken the journey from, you know, I enjoy fan fiction, I enjoy the fans, I enjoy Star Wars, let's see what we can do with this online, and then it turns into, you know, it grows, and then there's the interviews, and then there's the articles in the Star Wars Insider. So I watch people's, not only their fandom grow, but also them as part of this Star Wars community grow, like yourself. So it's really interesting to kind of be on the backside of this, looking in as folks do that.
It's funny, isn't it? You know, the years that you and me have been doing, since 99, let's say, you know, with Lightsaber and Galactic Void, and you think back to 99, all the sites that were around then.
There were so many.
Oh, yeah, you know, it was, and it seems to be, it's not sites so much now. Funny enough, we're doing it. It's podcasts that seem to be the thing that have really kind of caught on now.
Right.
It feels like another era of Star Wars. I mean, clearly with the sequels and the spin-offs coming, it is another era of Star Wars. And there's overlapping, if you want to look at it in that way, there's overlapping eras of Star Wars anyway. We're kind of coming out of the Clone Wars era now. I think there's probably another year left in that, and I would imagine that's probably going to finish. But you know, there's all these different sort of areas of Star Wars. And it's funny to see who now is still around that was around then. I mean, website-wise, obviously yourself, you know, the ForceNet. There's not Club Jade, who were a slightly different site then, but they've been around since sort of 95, I think, you know. You know, there's not that many who are still there.
The original yeah, cast of crew, yeah. You know.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and it's nice to see, you know, familiar faces, and it's nice to see new faces. Obviously, it's always nice to see new faces. You know, you get new guys, not that new now, but, you know, a fellow like Eric Geller, for example,
sure,
who's been on the scene for sort of 4 or 5 years, let's say, and now he's co-hosting the Forcecast, you know, and very good looks. You know, it's nice to see people who come through, and people who've got something to say, you know. I'm picking Eric as an example because, you know, I know him, but, you know, he's a guy with a lot to say. He's a voice in the community. People know who he is. And then there's us guys who've been around Star Wars as fans since day one.
Sure.
You know, and online for sort of well over a decade. You know,
we,
so it's a nice
remember
mix
when the internet came out.
You
know, yeah. The beginning of the internet, and we've kind of come online since then. So I remember when the internet really first became available to me, I was in the United States Air Force, and I served 8 years there. And one of the big things was the Air Force had kind of become technologically advanced in that way, and one of the first things we were doing was squadrons were having their own internet web pages to kind of put out schedules and things that were going on, and but it was only for the IT people, and I was not one of the IT people at that time, and I wanted to be involved with this because I could see the total connection with how I could put information out that has to do with Star Wars. So I got some folks that were higher ranking to help let me into some of the early classes that we would learn the basic HTML so we could I could start putting together. And I ended up being the one that was running the squadron website as a result of that. But the motive behind that for me was, okay, now how can I take this tool and make a Star Wars website out of it? That's kind of how I got started with that and just took off from there. And of course, my goal once I got out of the military and actually got out in 1999 was to start the Star Wars website that I had always wanted to start on my own. So that's how kind of Galactic Voyage got started, technically, anyway.
Was that always the plan? I mean, you know, what you've got with Galactic Voyage, from somebody from on the outside, it's always felt very consistent. You've had a consistent look about it, a consistent feel about it over all those years. Did you kind of know what you were looking for when you started doing it?
Well, actually, Galactic Voyage was going to be... the idea behind that was going to be a brick-and-mortar store originally. I had gone as a kid to a video game store where we used to be able to play, you know, used to be able to play video games long before the Xbox and 360 and all those things came out. That was, you know, you put the quarter or the token in the machine and you played games. And I know those, they're still out there, but there's not many left these days. But there was
Wreck-It Ralph, that's about it.
There was an arcade called Video Voyage, and I spent all my time and all my money. I had paper route back in that day, and I would use my paper route money to go fund my habit of playing video games, and I even had gotten to where I was helping to clean up the place to get extra tokens to be able to play. But Video Voyage was one of those places that I just always loved to go. And so I was originally thinking very early on, I loved comics, I loved to collect those, I loved the collecting the Star Wars stuff, and I knew I would go to a comic shop and pick up comics. This would be something I would love to do, but not only would I want to share my comics, but I would also like to sell toys or those type of things, you know, have an outlet for people to come get Star Wars toys, maybe some things that they haven't been able to find or they haven't been in stores recently. So the idea was, you know, Galactic Voyage is kind of how that came about out of the Video Voyage thought, and I was going to do a brick-and-mortar store. Well, of course, as soon as the internet hit, I realized really quick, especially when businesses started putting their pages out online, that this was not going to be a reality any further, that Galactic Voyage was not going to be a store. It was going. I had to decide that I was going to do something else with it. So I thought very early on, what is the thing that I would like to share with people that is kind of a passion for me? And, of course, the Star Wars ships has always been the big thing that I've always enjoyed so much of, and the characters themselves. So those two things, I thought, well, if I can get some of the information out there like that, maybe that – and there were plenty of sites that did it, but that was just the part of me that I wanted to share. And, of course, back then, the bandwidth was so small. I remember having to take my images and use a JPEG cruncher, which was a tool to reduce the file size, just to be able to have enough on there that I could house the information on the website itself. And, of course, as we've moved through the years, I've been able to do things like adding video, and I've been able to capture all the video game cutscenes and – not all of them. I'm still working on doing that, but that's another area that I've really enjoyed. And cutscenes from the movie or lost scenes from the movies. And, you know, like you said, that was something that was you were very passionate about. So, you know, through the years, I've just kind of had these ideas. You know, what would I like to see as a fan? And that's kind of how that's evolved. But originally, it was supposed to be a brick and mortar store.
How strange. I mean, we're not before our website thing really took off. We did a magazine essentially. There's a UK. There used to be a comic art convention in the UK called UCAC, UK Comic Art Convention. You have a load of American artists that come over and British artists, you know, 2000 AD and all those big names back in the sort of the early to mid-90s. And me and Louis went to one, and we launched. We did two issues of this magazine called Fanta War, which ended up actually being basically that first website, that Q Continuum. Kind of the same sort of thing as you, a physical entity. you know, before you go online and it's all lost in the ether. But yeah, no, I've always liked Galactic Voyage because, you know, you've always done your ships, you've always done your video clips, you know, it's a resource in that respect, and it's quite unique. And because you've got the tenure, you've got all those years of stuff behind you, which is why when I came to Jedi News, it wasn't just me coming to Jedi News, it was all those
stuff.
Years of... Yeah, exactly, yeah, totally, yeah, yeah, it was all that stuff, it's all those interviews. I mean, they're still not up on the site, we've still got to redesign the site, because there's so much, I don't think people realise, well, you will, because you were familiar with Lightsaber, but there's so much stuff coming from Lightsaber that's not even appearing on Jedi News. It's all sitting there in the background.
Right.
But it's not live yet, because we haven't really got the facilities to put it on live yet, but when it does, you'll have all those interviews on, and all those stories on, and all the roleplay stuff will be on. There's loads of stuff. So,
you definitely make the rounds throughout the Star Wars community, especially in the podcasting world, which you are always very gracious and allow your time to be had through anybody who's willing to talk Star Wars. So how are you kind of able to be involved so much with the fan community and get to so many conventions? I hear you talking about the things that you're doing in the UK, or you being interviewed on the news there in the UK, and then sometimes you make it to the United States to do things. How are you able to be so involved?
Very simple answer to that. I have a very understanding wife. And that's no joke. She's just texted me to say my dinner's now being taken to a sister's house, because we're going to a sister's house tonight to watch
right.
a film.
Yeah.
So I'm very lucky. This is going to sound terrible because I'm talking Star Wars now, but I'll talk Star Wars. If somebody even sparks up the merest hint of Star Wars in the conversation, I'm all over it. So I love talking about Star Wars. And in terms of the podcast stuff, I mean, I did a podcast back on Lightsaber about 2005, 2006 called Setting in Radio,
right.
which was just me and Louis. I don't know if you remember it, but it was just me and Louis. Basically, we just stuck a tape recorder on and just talked for an hour. And it wasn't just about Star Wars, it was predominantly, but it was also about what was happening in sci-fi at the time, so Galactica and Smallville and all that sort of stuff, so and Trek or whatever, you know. So we would talk about all sorts of things. So I've done a little bit in the past. But, yeah, I mean, I looked the other day, because I'm always updating the list, because I always seem to be doing bits and bobs, which is lovely. I think I've been on about 25 different podcasts, and some of them multiple times.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you used to host on Galactic Voyage, the Fanboys Guide to the Galaxy,
right.
So I was on that a couple of times,
that.
And, you know, and done the Sarlacc Pit a few times, and Dark Empire a few times, and, you know, and there's different ones. It's nice to be wanted. That's always a thing.
Well, you're always great to talk to, because you have so much that you have from the background, you know, and not that the folks that are newer don't have things to say, but you've had so many different experiences, and you've had so much through the history of Star Wars to bring to the table, and it's just very easy to talk with you. So it's always been great to have you know, hear you on podcasts, because I get to hear me on different ones. And as I mentioned before, you were on the Clone Wars Declassified this past week, and so it was really neat to hear the folks from Jedi News who were on talking about that particular episode. So.
Well, that came together really quite nicely, actually, because I mentioned to you before we started recording that I'd had a really long day's work, and by the time we actually went live, well, actually, it did go out live. I didn't even know until after somebody says, I listened to you live on whatever program it was. I was, really? I've only just recorded it. Oh, it went out live. Oh, blimey, I'm glad I never said anything that I shouldn't have said.
Yeah.
But, just what was it? Oh, well, if ever I say anything stupid, Gary will edit it out. I'll be all right.
Yeah.
But this was going out live, and I didn't really know. But... I was so tired. I'd been awake for about 22 hours, and it had been a long day of work. I do stock taking for my day job in between. But luckily, my wife's got a very good job, and we've got a very small mortgage, so I don't have to work crazy days. You know, it's not the massive pressure isn't on me, and thank goodness my wife absolutely adores her job, so it's no problem for her. So it's quite a nice situation that I'm in, which means that I can do all the stuff that I do on Lightsaber. You've got me saying Lightsaber now. on Jedi News and the Insider and all the other bits and bobs that I do. So, but I was so tired, and I listened back to it thinking, I'm going to make no sense whatsoever. Jimmy and Jason are never going to want me on the show again, because I'm going to have just talked complete nonsense. But luckily enough, I think I made some kind of sense. But I love it. I love doing it. I mean, we're hoping to, within fairly soon on Jedi News, do a podcast that will probably be a monthly one, just to have a bit of a presence out there in the podcast world. Because, like you say, it'll be nice then for me to be able to phone people like yourself and say, hey, Gary, do you want to come on the show and have a little chat? You know, it would be nice for me to be the host and turn it around a little bit and speak to people. So very much looking forward to that.
So, you know, speaking of Jedi News, let's switch back to that a little bit. What do you have, or what is the vision of the team for Jedi News as you all are moving forward? And, you know, we've heard several people say that, you know, we're now entering the golden age of Star Wars with everything that's going on. Kind of what's the vision of the team there at Jedi News?
That's a good question. When I joined Jedi News and Lightsaber merged, I think that the idea was, it was James's idea, and I'm glad he thought of it. Jedi News were very much a collector-focused site with an eye on news, general news, but mainly they were a collector site. So they were very much of the ilk of, you know, Yak Face and Jedi Temple Archives and Rebel Scum and those kind of guys. They were in that bunch. Excuse me. But with a little bit more of a wider angle, a sort of a wider lens on the Star Wars world than maybe those other sites did. But when I was doing Lightsaber, especially near the end, I was covering anything and everything. So me bringing that across to Jedi News has really sort of opened the filters, took the blinkers off. So you go to Jedi News now and it's so eclectic that I think people kind of find it, well, you say you never know what's going to happen next, you know, you never know what guest you were going to have in the webmaster interviews. It's the same sort of thing on Jedi News. You hit refresh and it could be an article about roleplay, it could be an article about another podcast, or you know, the latest rumour that's come out about Episode 7. So it's very, very much of a mix. But what I've tried to do is build a team. There's actually about a dozen of us essentially involved with Jedi News, but of that dozen, there's probably only four people who contribute on a very, very regular basis. The other people will write stuff in as and when. We've got a guy called Adam Bram who writes a blog or a blog entry, an article essentially, every Thursday. Fascinating stuff. He's very much a prequel fan, and he will write an article very much coming from that point of view, which I appreciate because I know the prequels take a heck of a knock in, and I love them. So I very much appreciate that being on the site. We've got another girl called Beth who does gaming reviews, so she does stuff on occasion. Teresa Delgado, you will have heard Teresa on Declassified with me and James. You know, she puts stuff on the site occasionally, but she also does the Star Wars report, and she's very much a big Disney fan, so she'll be doing stuff with that. So people, you know, contribute as and when and here and there, and it all kind of builds. So going forward, I think we'd just like to, we want to stay on top of the collecting news, because that's really the spine of what Jedi News is all about. And the big hits when we get big days, it generally comes from collecting news-related stuff. You know, that's where that comes from. But just to keep doing what we're doing, really, it's building nicely. We want to redesign the site a little bit so we can get all that old fiction on and all the old interviews, like I just mentioned, on. And I think we're just excited for what's ahead. You know, here we are, it's, you know, 2 months into 2013. We might get the new film in 2015. I personally think it'll probably be the year after. But you know, we're within a couple of years of new Star Wars films. And multiple Star Wars films. I mean, you know, if you and me were having this conversation this time last year, we're kind of looking in the rearview mirror, but we're not now. We're looking at the horizon, so it's a completely different feel. And you've just said the phrase, you know, entering a golden age of Star Wars. I totally think we are, because there's so many people now who are kind of qualified, if you like, to debate it and talk about it. Not that anybody who's just coming into Star Wars isn't just as qualified as somebody like you and me who's been here all the way through. Everybody's opinion is as valid as anybody else's. But I think fans who want to get into the stuff that we do, you know, what you do on Galactic Voyage and what we do on Jedi News and what you're doing on the Escape Pod and different things like that, you know, it's a great time to be a fan because there's so many different avenues that you can access essentially the same source of news but through different, you know, eyes and ears.
Right. Well, this has definitely been fantastic for this first part of our interview with Mark. And if you all are enjoying the conversation and wanted to get you all to have the ability to know a little bit more about Mark, be sure to join us again as we move forward next week with part two as we continue on talking about, we just now talked about the golden age of Star Wars. We're now going to really be delving in part two as to what Mark thinks about the new Star Wars films, and we're going to hit Episode 7 and the spin-off films, and so be sure to come back and join us for that as we move forward into this second part of our interview with Mark Newbold. Mark, thanks for this first part, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you on the second part.
My pleasure. It's been great fun. Thank you.
Thank you. So now, speaking of Star Wars, let's go ahead and get into part four of the Story of Star Wars LP. If you remember, in our last episode, we left off as Obi-Wan, Luke, had gotten with Han and Chewie in the cantina and had just made arrangements to fly aboard the Falcon, and they were talking about going to Docking Bay 94.
But Alderaan is also the destination of those with a darker purpose. Tarkin and Vader have decided that a demonstration star may persuade the princess to cooperate. Meanwhile, Ben's group has reassembled at a Mos Eisley docking bay to board the Millennium Falcon.
What a piece of junk!
She'll make 0.5 past light speed. She may not look like much, but she's got it where it counts, kid. I've made a lot of special modifications myself. But we're a little rushed, so if you'll just get on board, we'll get at it.
But the Imperial Stormtroopers have tracked the robots to the spaceport.
Stop that ship! Blast them!
Han Solo and Chewie exchange blasting laser fire with the troops as the others board the Falcon.
Chewie, get us out of here!
Oh my, I'd forgotten how much I hate space travel.
Like an Imperial cruiser, our passengers must be hotter than I thought. Try and hold them off. Angle a deflector shield while I make the calculations for the jump to light speed.
Stay sharp. There's two more coming in. They're going to try and cut us off.
Why don't you outrun them? I thought you said this thing was fast.
Watch your mouth, kid. You're going to find yourself floating home.
We'll be safe enough once we make the jump to hyperspace. Besides, I know a few maneuvers. We'll lose them. Here's where the fun begins.
How long before you can make the jump to light speed?
Take a few moments to get the coordinates from the navicomputer.
Are you kidding? The rate they're gaining?
Traveling through hyperspace ain't like dusting crops, boy. Without precise calculations, we'd fly right through a star or bounce too close to a supernova and that'd end your trip real quick, wouldn't it?
What's that flashing?
We're losing the deflector shield. Don't trap yourselves in. I'm going to make the jump to light speed.
The Millennium Falcon has leaped to light speed and safety, but the object of its mission, Princess Leia, is in grave danger aboard the Death Star. Tarkin attempts to force the information from her with a terrible threat.
Princess Leia, before your execution, I would like you to be my guest at a ceremony that will make this battle station operational. Since you are reluctant to provide us with the location of the rebel base, I have chosen to test this station's destructive power on your home planet of Alderaan.
No, Alderaan is peaceful. We have no weapons. You can't possibly...
You would prefer another target, a military target? Then name the system. Tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time. Where is the rebel base?
Dantooine. They're on Dantooine.
There. You see, Lord Vader, she can be reasonable. Continue with the operation. You may fire when ready.
What?
You're far too trust. Dantooine is too remote to make an effective demonstration, but don't worry. We will deal with your rebel friends soon enough.
Oh.
Commence primary ignition.
The awesome power of the battle station's lasers instantly reduces the planet of Alderaan to pulverized space dust. A cataclysmic disaster that Ben Kenobi can sense even from far away aboard the Millennium Falcon.
Are you all right? What's wrong?
I felt a great disturbance in the Force. As if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. I fear something terrible has happened. You better get on with your exercises.
Luke continues practicing with his Jedi lightsaber. He tries to strike a small metallic ball, which maneuvers elusively. Luke cannot make contact.
Remember, a Jedi can feel the Force flowing through him.
You mean he controls your actions?
Partially, but it also obeys your commands. This time, let go your conscious self and act on instinct.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see. How am I supposed to fight?
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. Stretch out with your feelings.
Luke assumes a frozen stance, and the remote target makes another pass. Luke deflects the bolts with swift strokes of the saber.
You see? You can do it.
Looks like we're coming up on Alderaan.
You know, I did feel something. I could almost see the remote.
That's good. You've taken your first step into a larger world.
But aboard the Death Star battle station, Princess Leia may be a step closer to execution.
Yes?
Our scout ships have reached Dantooine. They found the remains of a rebel base, but they estimate that it has been deserted for some time.
She lied. She lied to us.
I told you she would never consciously betray the rebellion.
Terminate her immediately.
Well, that's all the time we have on our show today. I'd like to say a special thanks to Mark Newbold for joining us in our briefing room for our interview with him today. And be sure to stay tuned for part two of that in our next episode, as we do get into talking about conversations about episode 7 and the spinoff film, so you won't want to miss that. Please be sure to visit us next time on the Galactic Escape Pod. Again, I'm your host, Gary Willis, and we're thanking you so much for joining us today. We can be reached at galactic-voyage.com. We can also be found on Twitter at Galactic Voyage. And if you'd like to send in any comments or thoughts or have questions, please feel free to email us at podcast@galactic-voyage.com. Again, my name is Gary Willis, and I'm so glad that you joined us today. Be sure to join us again next time on the Galactic Escape Pod. And always remember that
you've taken your first step into a larger world.
On the Galactic Escape Pod, the official podcast of galactic-voyage.com. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and is not endorsed in any way by Lucasfilm Limited. Star Wars, all sounds, characters, and music are the property of Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of galactic-voyage.com.